League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Here comes Kevin Love, steps into three.
The battle.
Active hands.
LeBron reclaimed it for Love. Kevin goes straight up.
Comes Trucker in the triple trouble.
Trucker. Cutting LeBron James. He knew the bailout plan. Went right to his left.
LeBron in the open floor. Head on the swivel.
Oh, he Euro-stepped him and scored it.
Nice fake in the pass. And a bank home for Dwayne Wade.
Kevin Love
drains it for three. Confident stroke for Caleb.
LeBron taking Dunn down into the office. Oh, he made him pay. Jay Crowder was right there. He shut his water off. What a goal winner.
It was defensive perfection, from the tips to the strips to the just everybody was just locking down defensively. It got us that 10-point lead, you know, because that team had played extremely well as of late, and you know, defensively we were just in tune.
Like a lot of things, football players, good students. But I think the thing I like best is those guys that really wanted to be at Michigan, appreciate, you know, what Michigan has to offer, the football powerhouse and an academic powerhouse. I like the production in football games, guys that are record setters and they're state champions. If I was Shea Patterson, I would have the mindset of, well, where did they get a load of me? All three have the license and ability to be great.
Hello everyone, Dick Enberg with Merlin Olsen. Welcome to our AFC Championship game. Brian Brennan, he's got it! And with 5 minutes 43 seconds left, Cleveland leads by 7. And now it'll be up to John Elway. Touchdown, Mark Jackson! It took Elway 5 minutes and 6 seconds to complete the drive of the game.
Draw to Biner, Ernest Biner. Fumble.
Fumble the ball, and Denver has recovered. Oh, my.
Montana to Rice. He's in the clear. What a day for Rice. Rice has just set a Super Bowl record with 12 catches. He's in motion. Montana. Touchdown. John Taylor. John Taylor, who sells cars in the offseason for Reggie Jackson, has just hit the home run for the 49ers.
And the Broncos are celebrating on the near sideline. And the 13-year domination of the NFC apparently has come to an end. And the man, the sentimental favorite, the fans who didn't care about who won this game, cared that John Elway got a Super Bowl ring.
Notre Dame 71, UCLA 70 with 6 seconds left. Into Walton, he can't score. Kinovich, Myers, teammate, it's all over.
Mr. Davis, once again.
The longest winning streak in collegiate sports history has ended.
He's one strike away, and these fans now are cheering for Nolan Ryan. 41,411. They'd like to go home saying, I saw my first one. And also a record time strikeout performance. Here it comes. He pops it up. A tough play. No hitting. Nolan Ryan. Ryan has become only the fifth man in modern Major League history to throw
after 60 years of broadcasting in this game, a reflection. We go back to those days of youth to Riggs Stadium, Tiger Stadium, and now to beautiful Comerica Park. It's game two of the three-game weekend series, the Detroit Tigers hosting the Tampa Bay Rays. And good afternoon, everyone. I'm very pleased and honored to be able to sit here today in the broadcast booth to call a game, the Detroit Tigers, going back as a young kid thinking, would someday I play for the Tigers? That was my dream. My dream has taken me to a terrific place.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And you know, I feel as though I can say I'm really, really glad that Dick Enberg did not get his dream. Because what he just said there at the end of that clip, the late Dick Enberg. He feels like he ended up in a pretty good place. It was a better place for all of us that he did end up where he did. If he'd have gotten his dream to play for the Tigers, he would have had a career for 2 or 5 or 10 years, and he would just be one of thousands and thousands and thousands of professional ball players. Right? That's what he would be. But instead, he didn't make his career to the, or didn't get his career, the dream of his career to get to the Tigers. He ended up in the broadcast booth. And because of that, millions and millions and millions of fans got to enjoy him. Jim Kushlin, nice job. That montage put together by Jim Kushlin. Just a little recap, a little bit of a tribute, a little bit of a commemoration to the career of the great Dick Enberg, who has indeed passed away. One of the great voices of sports in our generation, Kush.
Oh, yeah, no question. When I first came across the that
of
news...
Many early, generations, I should say. Sorry.
No doubt about that. And when I first came across that news earlier this morning, starting to look up things for today, basically I started to get sentimental right there. And unfortunately, as a Browns fan, the very first thing that popped into my head was like, wait, he was on the call for both of those games. Oh, I know what I'm doing today. I'm going to dig through the vault, if you will.
Yeah, and you know what? It was that's so much fun because, you know, you listen to some of those things, and obviously you could have played a two-hour clip there and not hit all of the highlights that Dick Enberg was, you know, wasn't so known for. But as I mentioned,
yeah,
you know,
Miss
what
tennis,
I loved about
Miss Golf. Sorry, guys.
What's that?
Miss Tennis and Miss Golf calls from Dick Enberg.
That's
sorry
what
about
I was about
that,
to say. I remember Dick Enberg was one of the greatest on tennis as well. I mean, he did such an amazing job for so many years calling tennis. His voice to me was, I don't know, I mean, almost more memorable for tennis than even any of the football or baseball things that you just played. When I hear Dick Enberg's voice, I kind of in my mind, I'm waiting for him to talk about McEnroe with the winner or Borg, you know, because he called all of those Wimbledon and
yeah,
just so many memorable events that he called. I mean, his voice is just perfect for that. So. Anyway, yeah, just a great tribute there to a great man, a great broadcaster, a legend, not just in our generation, I really should have said in our lifetimes, and quite frankly, in many lifetimes, Dick Enberg passed away today. So, at any rate, having said all of that, welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, the ticket where we are, Toledo sports leader. Coming up on in the second hour of the program, we're going to hear from Anthony Broom of MaizeAndBrew.com. Why? Well, you heard a little bit there in the montage of Jim Harbaugh. We have not yet spent a lot of time discussing the signing day feast for the Wolverines. How big of a feast? How good of a feast was it? We spent a lot of time analyzing Ohio State's class on early signing day and in this early signing period, but we did not talk Wolverines yet. So in the interest of fairness to our friends north of the state line, here in Toledo, we're allowed to say the M-word, right? We're allowed to say Michigan.
Yes, I think this is the one place in the state of Ohio we're allowed to do that.
Yeah, definitely. But we will talk a little Michigan football with Anthony Broom and talk about the signing period and some of the haul, if you will, that Jim Harbaugh was able to put together here in the fall. Then more college football. So you can kind of tell what our theme is going to be in the second hour as the UT Rockets take on Appalachian State tomorrow in the Dollar General Bowl down there in Mobile, Alabama. 7 o'clock start, and Chris, you're not talking to Jason Campbell this time around, huh?
No, he was a little busy, to say the least, down there in Mobile, so I made some calls to some old contacts, and a great guest we have lined up for you, play-by-play man, the man who took over for the legend Mark Beyer, Brett Balbinot, finishing up his second season calling Rockets football. He'll join me to talk all things Rockets and that bowl game about 4:40 today. Should be fun.
I got to tell you what, I do not envy him. He's done a terrific job at that. You know, walk into the microphone after Mark Beyer leaves it, that's in Toledo, Ohio, that's a daunting task. That's a daunting task, you know, after that familiar voice of Mark Rockets Beyer doing those games for so many years. That's tough. So good to hear. I'm glad we're gonna be able to hear his voice here on ESPN 106.5 the ticket. That'll be at around 4:35, 4:40, somewhere in there neighborhood. For this first hour, Kush, I'm going off the board.
Okay.
I'm not going to talk about the news of the day, the Cavaliers win or the Pistons loss or this Thursday night football game or any of that stuff. I'm not going there now.
There actually isn't a Thursday night game, by the way.
I know. That would have been yesterday if there was. but you understand my point.
Yes.
It's a Friday, and I'm not just going to rehash and talk about last night's score. So what's my point with that?
Right.
Over the course of the last several weeks of this NFL football season, we have had many, many shows, as have others, about things that just don't fit, things that the NFL is allowing to fester that they should fix, things that need to be fixed. Now, it's not always a rule, although oftentimes, if not most of the time, it is a rule. But there are a number of things that we have talked about, and it has got me wondering. It's kind of an age-old question, I think, sometimes. Some people use it as a sports talk crutch, and I don't intend to do that because I don't do that. But I just I'm thinking about the Juju Smith-Schuster hit on Vontaze Burfict.
Right, right.
I'm thinking also, ironically, a Steeler, about the Jesse James catch that was no catch against the Patriots. I am thinking about the Dez Bryant catch or no catch. I am thinking about NFL players disrespecting the fans and the country and the military and the flag that we represent before games. I am thinking about Roger Goodell being able to be the judge, jury, and executioner of all discipline in the National Football League, butchering it along the way when it comes to Ray Rice or Tom Brady or Ezekiel Elliott or anybody else. I'm thinking of Jerry Richardson being forced to sell his team. I'm thinking of, there's so many other things. I'm thinking of the plane, the ball breaking the plane in the end zone, but there is no plane on the sideline. Consistency. I'm thinking about replay being used to fix some egregious errors, but not others. I'm thinking of the way the NFL settles its disputes when it comes to a tie game after 60 minutes of play, the overtime rules. I'm thinking of so many things that demand a fix, and none of them are being fixed. And so I wanted to just ask this question of everybody listening today. If you could pick only one of the above, or something that I haven't mentioned yet, if you could pick one thing to change about the NFL, and it doesn't have to be a rule, you could say there should be no team over in Cleveland, Ohio, because it's so embarrassing. When they left, they never should have came back. This is an embarrassment. They're terrible. You could say the NFL should add a team in London. It's stupid for them not to take advantage of the European market. Or the NFL should stop playing games in London every week because it's ridiculous to make teams travel all the way across the pond, 5, 6, 7 hours, however long it is, just to go play games to make a few extra bucks. See what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be a rule. If you could change something about the National Football League, what would it be? Maybe, Jim, maybe it's the Thursday night game that I just mentioned to you. I just kind of mentioned it in passing, and you said there aren't any more this year, and of course you're right. But we've talked about them all year long. Should there even be any? Should they make players play on a Thursday night after putting their body through a sausage grinder on Sunday? Hey, enjoy licking those wounds on Monday. Try to get a little bit of rest on Tuesday. But you better be damn well game ready and doing your game prep on Wednesday because you're suiting up again Thursday to go through the grinder again. Oh, by the way, let's make sure that we put player safety first. Should we get rid of the Sunday night game? How about the defenseless player argument? Not hitting somebody if they're not looking your way. Wait, what? I have to wait until you tell me I'm ready to take your hit now in a full-speed contact game, and I'm supposed to be able to adjust my body speed and my target zone and everything else on the fly because you crouch? When you do see me coming, I'm aiming for your chest and your torso, and you crouch and bring your head down, and I hit you in the head, and I get the fine? I get the suspension? There are so many things that need to be fixed in this game. And I want to know if you could fix only one of them. If you could fix only one of them, what would it be? 866-240-1065. Right now, 866-240-1065. Should the catch rule be changed? My argument, absolutely, positively, yes. And if you're saying, how do you change it? You eliminate the phrase process of the catch, and you trust the judgment of the official on the field. If he says catch, it's a catch. That should be one of those plays that is not reviewable. kind of like holding. Nobody gets to go up to the booth to say, did he really hold? Did he really grab a hold of that neck collar? Or was his hand really under the jersey there? No, that's just up to the official on the field, and leave it alone. They need to get rid of the establishing the full process of the catch or completing the catch all the way to the ground. Or what was the new one, Jim? Surviving the ground.
Surviving the ground. My new, are you kidding me, NFL term.
I don't want to hear about you have to catch it, put both feet on the ground, or be lying on the ground, make a football move. But my ass, just catch a catch or no catch. Jesse James caught that ball. Dez Bryant caught that ball. Calvin Johnson caught that ball, going back to the original. Call catches, catches. Eliminate all of this, the rest of this nonsense. If the guy at the bar saw a catch, and the official on the field saw a catch, no idiot in New York looking at a monitor trying to decide if that was a football move when he reached over to break the plane or not a football move. Okay, it wasn't a football move, therefore that's incomplete. Kiss my incomplete A. Fix the catch rule. But is that the one I feel most strongly about? I'm going to give another one to you, Jim. It kind of goes along with what I just said about the asking a player to wait until the opponent that he's trying to hit or block is looking at him. Otherwise, he's a defenseless player, and it's an illegal hit or a crackback. It's just impossible to ask somebody to not play full speed because they don't know if this guy's going to turn his head in time. So I go half speed, three-quarter speed, waiting to see if he turns his head in time, and if he doesn't, I can't hit him. But if he does turn his head in time and he sees me and I'm only going to have speed, I get decked. Thanks, NFL. This, excuse me. This one is similar to that. Sorry about that. Kush, have you ever heard anybody ever argue against penalties for out-of-bounds late hits?
No, not that I can recall.
You're about to. in all seriousness, I've been thinking about this after seeing a few hits in the NFL this year as well. Where flags have been thrown as a defensive back comes up full speed, not knowing if the ball carrier who is going up the sideline, not knowing is he going to cut back on me into the open field, is he going to go straight ahead, or is he going to step out of bounds? I can't figure that out at slow motion. I have to go full speed at him. If he keeps going up the field, my hit is going to be the tackle that stops him. If he tries to cut back on me, my hit is going to be the tackle that stops him. If he chooses to step out of bounds at the last second, I can't stop my hit. I've already built up a head of speed. I run a 4.35 40-yard dash. I have got all 4.3 seconds of power behind me right now as I motor toward this dude. I don't know what he's going to do. Here I go. I'm hitting him. And oh, my God, he's on his second step out of bounds. I can't stop now because I'm not a magician, because I'm not Superman. I can't change my direction in midair. I'm going to hit the guy, and it should not be a penalty because I do. Defenders are there to make hits, to play aggressive, fast, full-speed football. So when somebody's in a dead sprint to a guy with the ball, receiver, quarterback, running back, doesn't matter to me. He can't be thinking, well, he might step out of bounds, so I better go slow here. Because then when you go slow and the guy cuts back on you and goes for a 70-yard score, who's it on? Who's that score on? It's on you. You've got to apologize to your teammates. You're the one on film who's going to look stupid. His job is to make that hit, and he can't just stop making the hit because suddenly a foot is out of bounds. I don't like that. So I don't know if you've ever heard anybody argue before in favor of eliminating, late hit penalties for out-of-bounds hits, but you've just heard it. Now, quite obviously, there would have to be a caveat with that. The plays that I'm talking about would be very easy to discern, and it would be a judgment call up to the official. That is different than when somebody is out of bounds for 5 yards, and somebody comes running and taking a wild running jump at him, as he's on his way back to the huddle. If something is egregious and really, really far out of bounds when the hit is made, and it's clear he could have pulled up or changed his direction before hitting him, then you do have official's discretion. Just like you have officials' discretion in many things, like I said, with holding, pass interference, those kinds of things. But that's one thing that I could see changing. So the catch rule, the out-of-bounds hit, the plane of the goal line, the kneeling rule. Why don't they just put the league bylaws into effect? It's a league bylaw, but it's not officially a league rule, so they don't have to enforce it as far as making players stand at attention and not disrespect and dishonor the game. So many different elements here. If you could change one thing about the National Football League, I want to know what it is. What would you do? 866-240-1065. Dial right now. We'll put you up and on the radio after we check our bottom of the hour sports center, which is after we get wild. Kush?
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day for this Friday. Last night, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 12 for 29 from three-point range in their win over the Bulls. And you're thinking, well, how's that wild? What's so wild about that? Well, it's the fact that the Cavaliers now have made 10 or more three-pointers with that dozen last night. 10 or more three-pointers 22 straight times. In 22 straight games, they've made 10 or more. That's a franchise record. Cavaliers, by the way, are using those threes to their advantage because they're 19-3 in those 22 straight games. So that is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Want to hear from you at 866-240-1065. Fix football by one rule. Fix it. What is it? You can't have two. Tell us next as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Let me say this as we get this discussion going, or continue the discussion anyway. Let me say this. It is, there are no wrong answers here. Pick one of them. Which is the most important to you? Fix the overtime. Fix the catch. Fix the plane of the goal line. I don't want there to be a plane. I think if you score a touchdown, it should be what it used to be, a touchdown. You have to be in the end zone, or the ball has to be in the end zone, touching down, not just crossing the imaginary plane. I don't want a guy diving. Remember how Derek Carr tried to do the other day? I don't want Derek Carr diving out of bounds at the two, trying to hold the ball over the pylon with his left arm. And if he gets it there, hey, that's a touchdown. He scored. No, he didn't. He himself, his body, did not carry the ball into the end zone or across the goal line and touch the ball down on the ground while in his possession. I want a touchdown to be what a touchdown actually used to be. What would you fix? What would you change? Yeah, what would you change about the game? The catch rule, as I described. The how did I describe it before? The helmet-to-helmet hit thing. That's the other thing. I didn't even get into this. If I'm a defensive player and I have helmet contact with another player's helmet, and it's clear to the official in his judgment, and in fact, maybe this, you know, Jim, see, in large part, what I might say if I had to pick just one of these, which is what I'm asking you and every listener to do, if I had to just pick one of these things to change, my one thing might be just, quote, change the way replay is done. Because that way I could encompass a few things.
Yeah.
Like, discern a player's intent as to where he hits somebody. I would let the replay guy, let the New York guy watch the hit again. Did I see this player's target get shifted because of the target's body movement? In other words, if a defensive linebacker or safety or a DB or whatever is you know, trying to do the right thing and has a shoulder on his way into the torso or chest of a ball carrier or a receiver, and that ball carrier or receiver sees him coming and does what the instinctive human thing is to do, and that is to crouch and kind of bring your shoulder pad down to absorb that hit rather than allow you to be hit in the ribs or whatever. And it brings the shoulder pad down, which brings the head along with it, and suddenly now there's helmet contact. I want the guy in New York to be able to look at that and say, that was not his target. His target changed because the player, the target that he was hitting changed, and he's not going to be punished for that. Not penalized, fined, flagged 15 yards or anything else. That would be a good use of replay. Flip side, as I said, is on a catch. Let the guy on the field decide, was that a catch as he went to the ground or not? And if something happened after he went to the ground, that is not part of the catch. That is part of, if anything, if he hasn't been touched down yet, maybe he fumbled. And if he has been touched down, it's a dead ball, that's it. Completed pass, down on the spot, down by contact. Stop sending those things to the replay officials. So to me, if I could fix one thing about the NFL, it might just be change the way replay is done. Change the things you're allowed to review and change some of the things, you know, that you are allowed to review now that you're, you know, that you should not be.
No, and that's a good answer. I really like that answer because, as you point out, it is one answer, which is what we're looking for, because you could go on, any of us could go on for like a half hour on all the various things we'd love rule change wise in the NFL. But what you just did there, it encompasses a whole bunch of small things under one umbrella. So I got to give you props for that. That's a good answer. For me, and I guess I was being a little too specific on this, but as I was thinking about the various things that I'd like to change, the one that kept popping into my head was this. And it's more of, to me, it's as if it's a symbolic rule change than anything else. The symbolic being that, to me, this is one of the rules, that really encapsulates the, for lack of a better term, wussification of the game.
Okay. I
would put the kickoffs back to where they used to be. Every doggone kickoff nowadays is a touchback because every kicker, once they moved it up, every kicker, and this was not hard to predict, is kicking the ball out of the back of the end zone for a touchback. In other words, as we know, there is basically no such thing as a kickoff return anymore. They did that for safety reasons, as we know.
Yes.
But it also changes the complexion of how games are played. I mean, you can no longer more or less have a Devin Hester type of guy because he's only would be useful on the punt returns, not as the kick and punt returns. There's basically no such thing as a kick returner anymore. They just stand there and watch it go over. And to me, there's lots of examples of this, but that's one symbolic rule to me of the whole, you know, trying to keep the game safe, but what you're really doing is changing how the game is played. And I've been against that, you know, since day one, because it takes certain things out of the game. I mean, they might as well just, why even have the kickoffs anymore? Just line them up. I think, what is it now, the 25 they go to? Which, yes, by the way, is not enough. If they're going to keep the rule the way it is now, that needs to be at least the 30-yard line. Make it so the kickers aren't always just trying to kick it out of the back of the end zone. So I would say, for more symbolic reasons than anything else, that'd be the rule that I would change.
I think that's,
and it was
a
tough call. I'm really a fan of the college overtime concept. I know a ton aren't, so I will say it was a tough call between those two. But
see,
I went with the kickoff.
Now you went and got me mad, because I was about to say that's a pretty good one. And I said, you know, I said before, and I mean it, there are no wrong answers here. But having said that, however, I would not change the overtime rule in the NFL to go to the college style. I don't like either one of them. I don't like the sudden death style, you know, where if you score three, the other team gets a ball and they can score seven, but then the game's over, sudden death. And I don't like the let's take turns doing penalty kicks the way they do in college football. And that's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't get to the 25-yard line. Why am I starting you on the 20-yard line or 25-yard line? You have to, in football, you have to earn your A into the 20-yard or to the 25-yard line zone. You have to earn your way there. And that includes defense, punting game, punt return game, passing game, all that. I don't like just starting there.
Yeah.
It's like having a free throw shooting contest or a penalty kick, penalty shots, like in hockey, or those shootouts, those kind of. I don't like that at all.
No, and I hear you on that one. If I were to change that rule to make it more like, let me say it, like the college overtime rule, the very first thing I do is, no, we're not starting at 25. You're starting back at the 40, 45. If you're going to do it that at all.
Well, I see. My point is, I want football to be played.
True.
If I'm changing the overtime, I'm changing it to football. What do they do in the NBA? They just play basketball for five more minutes.
Yep.
I'm not saying a full quarter. They don't go 12. Football doesn't have to go 15. Make them go 7. How much offense is jam-packed into the last 3.5 minutes of a fourth quarter of a tie or a one-score football game? I mean, the ball changes hands so many times, like, oh, my God, I got the ball on my own 40. Do I go for it here, or do I punt it away, trust my defense, and then get the ball with, like, you know, 70 seconds left and two timeouts? What can Tom Brady, what can Ben Roethlisberger do with 70 seconds and two timeouts? Can I get in the field goal range to win this thing or tie this thing? That's one of the most exciting periods of every game. Why not re-freaking create it in overtime? Put 5 minutes on the clock like they do in basketball. 5 minutes. Guys, it hasn't been decided yet. 5 minutes on the clock. Here's the coin flip. Play football. Whatever the score is now, at the end of the fifth quarter, whether it's a 5 minute quarter, 8 minute quarter, 7 minute quarter, 10 minute quarter, whatever. And all of these, you know, wussificators, I just made up a new word, all of these wussificators responsible for the, what you called the wussification of football will say, oh, but it's too hard on the player's body to go longer. My butt. Don't tell me, because you're already willing to play 10 minutes in the sudden death version of the game. You're putting 10 minutes in the clock, but we're going to end it on the first score. Bullcrap. Put 10 minutes on the clock and end it after, I don't know. What a crazy concept. 10 minutes. You know, and if I score a field goal, you don't have to beat me with a 7-pointer on this drive. You cannot score, and I might get it back and score a touchdown.
Right.
I might go up 10 in the overtime. And guess what? You still have 4.5 minutes left to close it. You might return my next kickoff for a touchdown. Yeah. And then get an onside kick. And in other words, play the game.
No, and you're right. And the current...
As it's been... Same thing with extra innings baseball. They play until there's a winner.
Yeah.
And everybody gets their six outs.
No, you're right.
Or you're each side, you know, you get six outs, come on.
Right.
You play until somebody has the lead when the game is over.
When a full inning is over, yeah.
That's why I hate college football's overtime rule. And you know what else it does, Jim?
It throws
it bastardizes
off the, yeah,
statistics.
I was just, yeah, you just took that out of my mouth. That's exactly what it does.
Bart Thompson threw, you know, 8 touchdown passes in a 56-54 win for UNLV over Texas Alamo.
And then you have to read 3 paragraphs down to find out it was 21-21 or something after 4.
Exactly, but then he threw 5 touchdown passes. They traded him from the 25-yard line in. It's just stupid. Play football the way it's meant to be played. I may have just changed my mind on the replay rule as mine. I may have just gone to the overtime because you pissed me off.
I will say this. The only thing that the current overtime rule got right, because this is what we all seem to universally hate about the original sudden death rule, was that each team gets the ball once unless the touchdown scored. But outside of that, I know people still have problems with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's get a few other thoughts on this. As I say, the goal here is to find out what you would change, not just what Jim and I would change, if we could change one thing about the broken mess that is pro football. Jimmy in Toledo, you're up. Jimmy, go ahead. What are you fixing?
Well, I'm going to kind of get a little loophole here because you weren't. I'm going to use a loophole.
All right.
You say one thing. Well, you didn't get too specific. I'm going to take the rule book and I'm going to go pre-merger rule book. I just changed the rule book. I just swapped the rule book out for the NFL, the pre-merger NFL rule book. All right. That's one thing. Let's make the game entertaining again. Let's bring the goalposts back to the original position. Right?
You've seen the old film. Why would you want the goalposts on the goal line?
Why not? That'd be awesome. Could you imagine the collisions you might get? Well,
yes,
listen,
I want
to see these guys running around with
the collision to be into another guy, not into an iron post with a freaking...
Oh, come on. We're talking, the NFL's about entertainment, first and foremost. I want to see people not just separated from their dollars. I want to see them separated from their senses. That's what football's all about. But listen, think about it.
Well,
I mean, they're only talking about they want
to
protect players, but listen, how about whatever happened to thigh pads and knee pads and shoulder pads? Man, you look at those old films, them dudes were wrapped up, they had pads, man, they looked like monsters, you know? These dudes now, they got all their padding because their armor is their bodies now because they get millions of dollars and they just, you know, they're all yoked up and rocked up, you know, because they're making millions of dollars. They're not selling cars and working retail on the off season anymore, right?
No, they're not.
Let's just go back to the old rule book. I say bring back Stick'em. Come on, man. Get with it. I'm telling you, that would be a great idea. Bring back all the old rules And then you wouldn't have to pay these quarterbacks millions of dollars, and you wouldn't see all the concussions probably, because these guys would be weighed down with all that old equipment. You'd probably take a couple seconds off their 40 time. They would be – think about it. All the concussions would probably go away because they'd have so much more padding. All the NFL owners would probably
Except have less soft tissue injury.
When
they're trying to run a slant route.
Well, yeah, but think about it. There's
that
less injuries, right?
A concussion or two, don't you think?
And how about this? I mean, the you would actually call holding. I mean, listen, have you ever looked at the old way you actually had to block people back in the day?
Yeah.
It would literally, like, electric football. Remember that game?
You put your chicken wings out and push them forward that way.
Exactly. You almost put your fists together. It was like electric football. Remember the blockers
of
electric football?
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
Exactly. Nowadays, dude, it's like, what, you're only allowed to grab them between the shoulder pads, but if you only grab them on the outside and hold on, it's,
and you
it's
have
a
to,
hold?
And when he gets past you anyway, you have to let go from holding him within 2 seconds or else it's holding. But you can hold him for two seconds.
So football really hasn't been football in years anyways, and then they wonder where all these injuries come from. I'm just saying, let's get creative and just make it football again, okay?
All right, my brother.
Maybe you wouldn't have to pay quarterbacks $50 million again, and maybe they could take control of their game and make a healthy profit and still keep it entertaining.
Well, you did indeed use the
loop. And let them play defense at the same time.
All right, Jimmy. Thanks, man. Got to run. Later. Merry Christmas, brother. Appreciate it. Always. Dan and Napoleon is next. Dan, what would you fix about the NFL? Doesn't have to be a rule. What thing where you could get rid of Thursday night games, you could contract the league and get rid of some teams, fix the NFL, what would you do? One thing.
No, the overtime. Why do they have to stop when it's tied? Why do they have to stop the game and have a kickoff? All you have to do is keep on playing. Whoever has the ball, when it runs down the double O's, just keep on going with it for 10 minutes, a quarter, next four wins. That means if you tie the game up and with 1 minute to go, you know your opponent's going to have the ball for at least a minute, or possibly instead of just 1 minute,
because that sucks. Hold on, that excitement, Dan. That sucks some of the excitement away from the end of regulation. That's the problem.
Dan,
I'm having a hard time understanding you. You got a bad connection or something. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'm driving around. I'm
going
the motor route.
Okay, that's all right. Thanks for the call, Dan. Let me respond to that though, before the next caller. That would suck some of the excitement out of the end of regulation. If a team that is on, let's say, the other team's 20, okay, on the way in to score, and, well, maybe that's too close because then they would just kick the field goal, but let's say they're on the other team's 40 and they're on their way in a really good position here and there's 13 seconds left, why should they bother throwing one into the end zone? Why should they bother trying to get a deep out for 20 yards to get the field goal kicker in range? If I can throw a deep out and get another 12, 15, 20 yards here, I could got one timeout left, or I can spike it and bring my kicker on to win it in regulation. Why would he have any incentive to do that if we're just going to continue playing when the clock strikes zero? Okay, just add 5 minutes onto the clock and pick it up where it is? Now you've sucked all of the excitement out of trying to win the game in regulation and not having to go to overtime. What makes overtime daunting for teams is what? We don't know if we're getting the ball. We don't know. I mean, I've got the ball on the other team's 40 right now. Do I go for this or do I play for overtime? If I go for this now, I have a chance to score. If I don't and play for overtime, I might not have the ball. They'll have a chance to score because there's a coin flip. Now, I don't change that part of overtime at all. You got to keep the coin flip because that keeps the excitement of the end of regular season in play.
Regulation.
Quarters. Regulation. Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word regulation. Brandon is calling us from Toledo next. Brandon, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's shaking?
All right. One thing, by the way, how are you doing?
I'm very well, my friend. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you. What's on your? What do you got? What are you fixing?
One thing that's always kind of bothered me is the disciplinary system. I really never understood why Gronk could get one game suspension for something out of the context of football, and Juju Smith-Schuster makes a block. It's an illegal block now, but it's within the confines of the game, and they both got one game suspensions. I think there needs to be a guideline set in place for things in terms of disciplinary action, stuff outside the game, stuff within the context of the game. That way, not only players know, but that way these stupid appeal, like the, I just seen that Thomas Davis got suspended 2 games, and then the next day he's suspended for 1 game.
Yep, they appealed it.
There's no consistency. Like I thought my personal belief was Michael Crabtree. I know you remember him getting in the fight again with Tlaib.
Yep.
The play before he goes and punches Chris Harris in the stomach, he knew he was going to go start a fight.
Yep.
I believe he should have been suspended 3 or 4 games just because of the fact of what he did. And the same thing, I don't know, I don't think AJ Green's was such egregious, but he started the fight. And I think a lot of that stuff needs to be put to where if it's not in the game, and there needs to be a guideline set, that way there's precedent for players that, hey, if I do this, I'm going to miss this amount of games and it not be appealed, because the disciplinary process is a joke.
It is a joke. And I kind of mentioned that at the beginning of my commentary about this whole thing about Roger Goodell having all of the power to make those decisions. And I think in addition to the guidelines, as you're pointing out, they should definitely be something drawn, a distinction between a football play, something that happens in the context of football versus something that is not. The punch to the gut of Harris you mentioned, not football. The Gronk hit, not football. The Smith hit, definitely football. Smith-Schuster, that is. That's definitely football, and they should be. But in addition to all of that, I think there should be a panel, like a jury.
I was just going to say the same thing. A committee of former coaches, players, and they make the decision, and then if you appeal, then you go on and appeal to Roger Goodell. That way, not only he's not judged.
No, because everybody will appeal everything. Then Goodell still ends up being the arbiter of everything. No. Screw that. It goes to a jury, if you will. A 5 or 6 person. It'd have to be 5. It would have to be odd, so it's not split 3-3 and be a hung jury, if you will. It should be a 5 or 7, you know, the way they have the Supreme Court.
And then it stands that it is with coaches and ex-coaches and ex-players. That way they understand,
exactly,
too.
People who know the game and they know what a real punishment should be.
You know, that's a fascinating idea. My only thing is, do you think out of the committee jury that we're talking about, do you think one should be an official of some kind or former?
Yeah, that's not bad.
I would think so. Someone like I know Blandino and Carey, who retired. Somebody who kind of that way they put their input on it. I think that would be a good idea. It's better than what we have now. I'll tell you that now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I would be okay with that. One of them be an official. You know, if it's a 5-man panel. Thanks for the call, by the way. Great stuff. Yep. That's a really great conversation right there. For me, Jim, I would go. You know, if it's a 5-man panel, you know, 2 former players, 2 former coaches, and a former official.
There you go, right there. That sounds perfect to me.
And literally, it doesn't have to be 5-0. It can be a majority rules, like they do in the Supreme Court when they decide cases.
Right.
3-2, or if it's 4-1, or if it's 5-0, exactly. Whatever. You know, to hand down that punishment.
I like the outside box thing. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, that could really, really change things as far as you know, the punishments in the game. Who's this? PJ next? PJ in Toledo. PJ, thanks for joining us on the Extravaganza. Go ahead, sir.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, sir.
I'm not doing damage control. I really do believe Notre Dame has a legitimate chance of beating LSU despite all the 2 players being arrested. LSU has lost all 3 of their starting linebackers to injuries, so the injury card cannot be played. Whatever we did yesterday, National Signing Day, this is a must-win for Kelly, and I'm a Kelly fan. I know everybody was down for Kelly last year, the toxic environment, all this. He won 9 games this year. If they can run the ball, and they should, they will win their first New Year's Day Bowl in 25 years. It's unforgivable that it's went on that long. It needs to end.
That's that is a great word for it, unforgivable. That's very well said. Did you have something on the rule?
No, it's just that Notre Dame should be absolved of their sins if they win this game.
I'm okay with saying that. I'm not a Brian Kelly fan. I said that at the beginning of the year. I said it after the first couple of games.
I like Fitzgerald and David Shaw. David Shaw's perfectly capable of coaching there, too. But
too. That's a very good one. I like Pat Fitzgerald, too. That's another really good one. Yeah, I really think. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I really think that Brian Kelly should move on. I just don't know that that's necessarily the right thing for Notre Dame from a where they are as a program standpoint and, quite frankly, from a how do I want my university represented standpoint. I'm just not a fan of the way he carries himself or presents his program. Just a person. Rolling on, are we, right here on ESPN 106.5, the Ticket End Hour number 2. Thanks again for being with us. We promised we wanted to talk a little bit of Michigan football because we talked so much Ohio State football when the early signing period, of course, commenced with a whole bunch of recruits going the Buckeyes' way. What is Jim Harbaugh doing to close the gap between his guys and Urban Meyer's guys? That's the big question. And, of course, the guys of Coach D'Antonio up there in East Lansing as well. So I want to talk a little Michigan recruiting. And to do that, we bring in Anthony Broom, as promised, from maizeandbrew.com, an outstanding Michigan Wolverine site. Anthony, good to talk to you again. First of all, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Same to you. The most wonderful time of the year, they say.
Yeah, it's in a song somewhere, I think, like that, yes. And we're supposed to jingle our bells and all that sort of thing, too,
from what I've heard. This extra signing period, it just adds to that, let me tell you.
All right, so it is a merry time. There were some presents in the stockings, if you will, if we can continue that metaphor of some of the Big Ten's best coaches, including Urban Meyer and including Mark D'Antonio. But we want to focus, of course, on your guys. And your guy, Coach Jim Harbaugh. So let's dive right into this. First of all, actually, before we dive into what kinds of players Harbaugh was able to get names on dotted lines about, what is your opinion, Anthony? Because we had some really interesting back and forth with some of the Ohio State guys about the period itself. After Urban Meyer kind of made some critical comments about it, Nick Saban made some very strong critical comments about the early signing period as they're trying to get ready for bowl games and playoff games and whatnot. And that it creates some problems in some cases where players are being demanded that you sign now or else we might not still have your scholarship come February, and it puts a lot of pressure on guys who might not be ready to do this. So just in general, what do you make of the idea of the early signing day?
I see both sides of the debate. I mean, obviously, like you said, you have teams preparing for bowl games, you have the Alabamas, the Clemsons of the world are, you know, preparing for the playoffs. So, you know, it's kind of a day that you kind of, or a couple days actually, you know, it ended on Friday, where you kind of almost check yourself out mentally to, you know, make sure these faxes are in, things like that. You know, I don't know if moving, well, they're not moving signing, but I don't know if, you know, a signing period that's 2 months before the regular period is really such a, I don't know if it helps a whole lot. I think what it does change is, so the schools that maybe you're having coaching changes and things like that, you're able to lock some of those guys in. Whereas, like, if you did a signing period in August, which is something that people have talked about, you know, you may have guys signing up for something they're not really sure what they're getting into if a coach is on the hot seat and things like that. So it is a little hectic. It definitely takes a little bit of drama out of the February signing period, but overall, I think, you know, you're going to have the guys that are going to be on campus for spring football are signing early anyway. So, you know, I think really what it does mostly is peace of mind for not only the kids to get their recruitments done and out of the way, but, you know, you don't have quite as much as the maybe guys getting scholarships pulled a couple days or a couple weeks before signing day and things like that. So, I think really all it adds is peace of mind. Some guys, once they commit, they just want to shut it down and sign as soon as they can. So, and the coaches want that as well because, you know, even till signing day, you're fighting off the other school for these signatures. So it does help peace of mind, though. It kind of comes during a hectic time with, you know, not only the bowl games and, you know, wrapping up your season and maybe even coaching changes here and there, but with the holidays as well. So it is a little bit crazy, but, you know, overall it's you know, peace of mind is the theme here.
Anthony, really great points that you make. What have you heard from Harbaugh or anybody else on the Michigan staff or anybody else close to the program about how they feel about the early signing period? Is this a good thing, exciting thing for them, or, you know, like a lot of the other coaches have expressed, it takes away from their preparation for a bowl game?
Yeah, I haven't heard comments specifically from them on it. I know, like I said before, a lot of them are relieved to just kind of get their guys in there to make things official, things like that. But overall, like you said before, I think the prevailing thought with the coaches, not just in Michigan, but really nationwide, is that, you know, we're preparing for a bowl game. We're preparing for, you know, to kind of, you know, for a lot of schools, and Michigan included, you want to end your season with a bang and kind of go into 2018 with some momentum in a bowl game and a big win, and then you have to kind of pause that and turn your focus to that. So I certainly think that Michigan – would fall in that category as well. You know, Jim Harbaugh is very, you know, he likes to focus on one thing at a time and kind of go all in on it. And, you know, with the bowl game going on, you just had the transfer stuff with Shea Patterson. You know, there's been balancing a lot of plates recently. And I think that this is, you know, while they're happy to have the guys that they got in and happy to have them signed, I do think that that it is a little bit, I won't call it a distraction, but it does kind of take away a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And now let's talk about some of the gets here. We're talking to Anthony Brew, MasonBrew.com, tremendous Michigan website. You're probably already all over it anyway, but if you're not, make sure you put that in your bookmarks bar on your browser. So let's talk about some of the guys that they did sign. Who is their best get, their highest-rated prospect, in your opinion? And I know some services have them as a five-star or four-star or whatever. But in your opinion, who's the best get from the early signing? And who's the one you're most surprised about? Somebody you thought was going somewhere else that maybe Harbaugh was able to flip, and suddenly, bam, he puts his name on a Michigan contract.
Well, I'll start with the best guy. I mean, okay, if you look at the rankings, the 24/7 composite rankings, they have as Mustafa Muhammad, the tight end out of Texas. That's a good get for them. Obviously, anyone who's followed Jim Harbaugh, who's followed Michigan in the last, you know, a couple of years, knows how important the tight end position is. And they like him, too. They were surprised that he was going to sign this week as opposed to February. So, I mean, if there's a surprise there, maybe that's it. I mean, there's not. I don't really see a whole lot of drama with this group right now. I certainly, like Joe Milton, the quarterback, everyone's going to look at quarterback because Michigan has, you know, struggled to find one. I like Joe Milton a lot. I mean, that's a guy who has as much arm, you know, pure arm talent as any of the guys they brought in so far. Footwork needs some work, and, you know, mechanically there are things they need to do to coach him up. But, you know, you got to get the guy on campus first, and you can worry about those things later. So, to me, those two are kind of the crown jewels. The surprise here, and he didn't sign, but he will be signing in February, is the commitment they got this week, this past week, from a kid named Ronnie Bell out of Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's being looked at a lot for, you know, he signed a letter of intent to go play basketball somewhere else. And someone that wasn't really on Michigan's radar, but all of a sudden they offer him and he's part of the class. You know, he committed, you know, almost instantly. So I was kind of surprised by that. I think the biggest thing, a lot of people are, I'll say, a little bit underwhelmed with the class because it's not that top five, top three class that people are expecting. But, you know, it's, you know, if this is a down recruiting class and you're still the 12th ranked class in the country where we stand today, I still think you're doing a pretty good job. So overall, I mean, it may lack the star power. It may lack the guys that we've seen the last few years that have come out and, you know, contributed early on and been a big part of the team early on. So maybe not as many instant impact guys, but still guys that I think they like a lot and feel pretty good about.
Anthony Broom, our guest, as we talk Michigan football right here on the Extravaganza on this last Friday before Christmas. Of course, we will not be live on Christmas Day or Tuesday, but really want to make sure that we make the most of this opportunity and talk about the signing day for the Wolverines after spending so much time on the Buckeyes. I've got a follow-up on Milton, but I know Jim Cushlin has a question on the quarterbacks, too, so we'll see if we cross over each other, Jim.
You know, well, what I'm looking at is revolved around the whole Shea Patterson thing. The big notation is he's coming over from transfer, of course, from Mississippi. There's those sanctions that are being put on the Rebels down there. What's going to be his status? It still feels like, and from what I understand, still is up in the air if he's even going to be eligible for 2018. So kind of a two-part question here, Anthony. If he's eligible, Patterson, is he the starter? And if he's not, what is Michigan doing at quarterback?
Well, I'll say on his eligibility, based on – it is still up in the air. I mean, it kind of seems like a legal matter that's going to be tended to, and they'll take care of all that. But, you know, everyone I've talked to, everyone that, you know, is kind of in the know about the situation, seems pretty confident that he's going to be eligible to play. I know there are analysts across the country that think he'll be eligible to play. So, I mean, people in the know think that he's going to be ready to go. So, I mean, that's definitely a hurdle to cross if he is eligible. Listen, I mean, we talk about how people are underwhelmed with the recruiting class. If you want to kind of throw him into the mix, I mean, that's kind of the crown jewel of the last few weeks for them. You know, it's a former five-star talent, a kid who, you know, is as talented as really any quarterback in the country. You know, there are some, you know, he didn't play well in big games against Alabama, LSU, some of the bigger teams in the SEC, but You know, just to have that guy on campus, have him part of the rotation. I'll say this about him. He's very good, and some people had him even as a first-round talent for next year's NFL draft. Do not sleep on Brandon Peters. I think Michigan has something there. I'm really excited to see what he's able to do in the bowl game. And that's a guy where people said, oh, you bring in Shea Patterson, is that going to scare some of these guys off? Is it going to scare away a Peters or a McCaffrey?
Or Joe Milton, to be honest. That was my follow-up. You know, I was surprised that after Patterson made this announcement and they went ahead and took him as a transfer, I wondered if a guy like Milton, a four-star quarterback, is like, whoa. They already had Peters and McCaffrey, and I was prepared to compete with those guys for the next 2-3 years. But now here comes the transfer, Patterson. And what is he? He's a sophomore?
He's a sophomore going into his junior.
Shea's a sophomore going into his junior. Okay, so, I mean, I was surprised that a guy like Milton would say, okay, I'm going to be flipping and signing a letter of intent someplace else. So there's a ton of competition at that spot now.
Yeah, and this is this is maybe a little bit cliche and maybe things like that, but the thing I'll give Michigan credit for is that it seems like the guys that they are recruiting at that position are – you know, they're coming in with open minds and they're coming in to compete. I mean, they want to compete. They have that edge to them. So that certainly was a sentiment that Brandon Peters' camp echoed. His dad did an interview a few weeks ago where, you know, he said, you know, Brandon isn't scared off by this. He's ready to, you know, go out and show why he's the guy. And, you know, everyone that comes in is gonna show why they should be the guy. And, you know. It's a win-win. I mean, you have a bunch of – the guys that don't win the competition may transfer out, but the guys that do should end up being pretty good. So, you know, as far as Michigan goes, I mean, I know there's been talk about, you know, they haven't been able to find a quarterback. You know, Wilton Spate, John O'Korn, you know, these guys haven't panned out. O'Korn was brought in as a transfer by Harbaugh, but those weren't guys that – you know, he was a reclamation project. And even Wilton Spate, before he got injured at the end of last season, you know, was developing pretty well. And, you know, he's a guy who – felt he had proved everything and he's moving on. So with the guys that they've lost, I mean, they've lost, and you know, you've lost Wilton Spate. Alex Malzone will be transferring too, but I think the guys, there's more upside with the guys that are coming in. So, you know, that's how
so
it goes.
If you roll
the balls out there and see what happens.
If you were forced to put a month's worth of paychecks down right now in Vegas on one name to be the starter opening day in 2018, what name do you put down?
Whew. Man, if he's eligible, I would say Shea Patterson. It's 50-50, though. I mean, I do like Brandon Peters a lot. I know there were people that say, oh, he didn't show a lot in the games that he was in there. They didn't throw the ball a lot. The numbers aren't there. But you look at what he's able to do with his feet, the one that sticks out to me, there was the long throw at the end of the first half in that Wisconsin game to Peoples-Jones. So, the talent is there, and that's a guy that Michigan people have been kind of talking him up since he's been on campus. So we'll see. I mean, it's not a competition of, you know, whoever stinks the least anymore. It's whoever's the best. So it's going to be one of the really interesting things to find out when camp opens up next summer.
We're talking to Anthony Broom, masonbrew.com, about Michigan's early signing recruiting class. I want to go back to just the overall class for a second because of what you said. You know, it's not a top five class, but you said if this is a down recruiting class and still 12th best in the country, then you're doing okay. But can Harbaugh afford to do just okay with a 12th best in the country recruiting class, given the fact that he's 2-7 against the combination of Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State in 3 years, and everybody's expecting that stuff to stop, that they're supposed to go back to the top of the conference? Can you do that with the 12th best class? Is this going to be a little disappointing for Michigan fans who are now like, hey, look, I understand, as he got his feet underneath him that very first year, you know, where the class was, but we expect this to be, you know, the premier place for people to come. We can't be bringing in 12th-rated classes around here.
Right, and I think it's kind of the perfect storm of you're coming off of a down season, you have question marks going into next season, you're bringing in a recruiting class now that, you know, isn't the highest rated that Michigan's had in the last few years. So it is kind of the perfect storm where people are like, okay, well, what's going on here? Should we be concerned about the future? I'll say this. I think that Jim Harbaugh and what this program is going to be and what will kind of define him is next season. It's going to be the last two classes that they brought in, the 2016 class, 2017 class. How those guys develop, how those guys kind of perform is going to kind of determine if the 12th class is kind of a blip on the radar or if it's a sign of things to come. You know, I think when you look at some of these elite programs, even these teams in the college football playoff, I mean, you know, Clemson, Alabama, even Georgia now, you have to stack those top five classes. Michigan has had a few of those in the last few years. And then there's this year. So, the 2019 class, I mean, that will be one to watch.
Yeah.
You're looking at them, you know, if they get back in that top five, then, you know, this is kind of a blip on the radar for them. But, you know, to be that sustained level of success, to be that college football playoff contender, which is what people expect Michigan to be, you have to stack those type of classes. So I think they've done a pretty good job overall. Not really going to panic that this isn't quite as sexy a class, so to speak, but you know, there's still guys there, and you know, even I think they've done a pretty good job of hitting on some of the lower ranked guys too. So I'm not all that worried about it. I don't think Michigan fans should be all that worried about it. You know, you want to be the school that everyone's talking about on National Signing Day, but you know, I think you'd rather be the school that people are talking about in November and December.
Absolutely, on National Championship Day, or if you're in playoff days, there's no doubt about that. Anthony, really great stuff, my friend. Thanks for catching us up on Michigan football. We always appreciate your perspective. We'll catch up again after the first of the year, and certainly maybe around February when the next part of the recruiting phase ends with what we used to know as the original signing day. So we appreciate your time, Anthony. Merry Christmas to you, and thanks again for the time.
Yeah, say Merry Christmas to you guys and enjoy the holidays.
Thank you. We will indeed. All right, we've got to get out here because we got to make room. There is a bowl game a-coming for the Toledo Rockets. Rockets in the Dollar General Bowl against App State. And Jim Cushlin, you got a nice conversation coming up, yes?
Yes, indeed, I do. Usually we try to get head coach Jason Candle, but very, very busy, to say the least, down there in Mobile. So did the next best thing. Reached out to a couple of old contacts, and I was able to snag the play-by-play man for the Toledo Rockets. The man who took over just two seasons ago, by the way, for the legendary Mark Beyer, Brett Balbinot, will join me talking all things Rockets in the bowl game tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the kickoff time, by the way, to wrap up your Saturday bowl games across the nation. Should
love
be
it.
A fun one.
I love talking to play-by-play guys like Keels and Branstad.
Yes.
This is going to be a good one as well. So we've got Rockets bowl preview time coming up after the bottom of the hour Sports Center, which is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. Final segment of this Friday edition. And final segment also before the Christmas holiday we all got coming up. Just a reminder, we will not have shows. We'll have NBA and NFL coverage coming up on Monday. We'll reconvene coming up on Tuesday. And there's so much to get to over the course of this weekend. And thanks, by the way, to Anthony Broom of Mason Brew for talking a little Michigan signing day period with us last segment. Now to talk some football that's actually going to happen here in the next couple days. Tomorrow, to be specific, the Mid-American Conference champion Toledo Rockets down in Mobile, Alabama for the Dollar General Bowl rematch against the co-champions of the Sun Belt, Appalachian State. And to help us break down the game in this season for the Toledo Rockets has been one of the better ones, of course, in Rocket history. We welcome in, first time here on the program, the play-by-play voice in his second year with the Toledo Rockets. Brent Balbinot joins us from Mobile. Good afternoon, Brent. How you doing today?
Doing fine, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no. Thank you so much for taking the time. The Dollar General Bowl, that's where you're at down in Mobile, just getting in there. The team, of course, has been there for a little bit. Before we get into some of the nitty-gritty of this game, one thing that, to me, has stood out so much for this season for a Rockets team, 11-2, going to and winning their first MAC championship in 13 years, is kind of an in-general question. Where does this season, do you feel, in terms of Rocket history, where does this one rank? Because for me, it's up there. It may not be the best season in Rockets history, but it's certainly up there on the list, if you will. Where would you put this season of success for the Rockets?
Well, again, I have to kind of compare it to what I've seen, but from talking to those that have been around, and all you have to do is take a look at the media guide and the history books. They have a chance to become just the third team in program history to win 12 games. The last time that's happened has been over 40 decades ago with Chuck Ealy and some of those great teams in the late 60s and early 70s that went undefeated for a few seasons at 35-0. So to be honest with you, they're going to keep some pretty good company. They already are keeping pretty good company. They'll just raise their stock if they happen to win tomorrow.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Yeah, those early 70s, maybe a couple of teams in the 90s, one of the teams with Bruce Gradkowski, but this one is certainly one of the better ones, and we know it starts with the offensive side of the ball with this Rockets team. Logan Woodside in what will be his final game tomorrow, basically rewriting the record books for Toledo Rockets in terms of quarterback play. Just what an outstanding talent. We've gushed over him so much, but you've gotten to see him up close and personal these last couple of years. Talk to me overall about just how good of a quarterback he's been, not just in Toledo, but in college football in general.
Well, I think all you have to do is take a look at his stats. What's the old phrase? Your actions speak so loud, I can't hear a word you're saying. That's where you start with him. If you don't go down to the elite Manning Passing Academy, number one, you get invited. And number two, you don't get voted the most valuable player amongst the nation's elite without being elite yourself. Standing alongside one of the greatest, the last quarterback prior to this season to win a MAC championship in Bruce Gradkowski, this is a guy who's played 11 years in the NFL, so he knows what it takes to play at the next level. And we both are in incredible agreement. It's not just the physical skill set that Logan has, but mentally, he's just got such a high football IQ, even more so than they had last year. He's got all the skills to be successful at the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got all those types of skills, again, setting the career records for the Rockets. Side note, by the way, since you brought him up, how fun has it been to have Bruce Gradkowski hanging around the booth with you?
Well, I'm within earshot of the rest of the radio crew, but I think they'd all agree with me. Bruce is fun. He's a bit of a character, but he also gets serious come kickoff time. He knows what he's seeing. He's been an invaluable part of this broadcast crew.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's been absolutely fun listening to you guys, over the course of the year. We're talking with Brett Balbinot, play-by-play man for the Toledo Rockets. They're getting set for the Dollar General Bowl tomorrow night in Mobile against Appalachian State. In terms of some of the other things, though, on offense, this isn't just a Logan Woodside passing attack, despite how good and solid we know he has been. They've also had an outstanding running game, have the Rockets this year, with a wonderful mixture, I felt, and I've spoken with head coach Jason Candle many times over the course of the season about this, and you got the veteranship in guys like Terry Swanson, and then you got some of the younger guys contributing, and it's been such a balanced offense, and that's part of the reason it's been such a good offense.
Well, you can't have, basically you got to have balance, and Logan Woodside would be the first to tell you it's not just a one-man show, and it starts up front. They've been banged up a lot this year. As a matter of fact, it's been a roulette wheel. They only have two guys backing up five positions. And between Nate Jepson and Bryce Harris, they'll switch back and forth from guard to center. But the anchors have been Brant Weiss and Elijah Nkansa. Especially, there's a reason why left tackles in the NFL make so much money. That's because you got to protect the guy's blind side. And Logan will be the first to tell you he's had plenty of time, not just to go deep downfield, but with him this year, it hasn't just been touchdown or check down. He's had enough time to be able to go through his progressions, make his reads, and sometimes it's been those backs out of the backfield. Like you said, and Terry Swanson has over 150 yards receiving. Art Tompkins, 110. Shaquise Seymour, 90. So those guys are threats out of the backfield as receivers, not just as rushers.
Let's talk the defensive side of the ball, Brent. And outside of a couple of touchdowns very late in the MAC championship game a couple weeks ago when the game was already decided, I thought good defensive performances out of the Rockets in the last couple of games. It may not statistically be one of the better defenses in terms of the numbers, but they've stepped up at times as under the radar as it might have been with how prolific the offense is. They've stepped up a number of times, and I thought they did so at points in the last couple of games out. Talk to me defensively what you've seen out of this team, because I had many times over the course of the year, Brent, think it's very underrated.
I would agree with you, and progressively better. I would say probably from the start of the conference opener against Eastern Michigan. Everybody remembers that game, obviously, because Cody Thompson went down on his first touch, and it ended his season. But with only one exception, nobody had scored more than 18 points through the first, I think it was, four or five conference games. This group is about in the middle of the pack, and from where they've come from, that is a huge success. Fourth in the MAC and rush defense, sixth in pass defense. You take a look at total defense, seventh, but where it really matters the most is on the scoreboard, and they're right down the middle, number five, at about 25 points per game. A year ago, this group was near the bottom in just about every category, and I know they may not look glossy, but those numbers, I think, should be a real tip of the cap to defensive coordinator Brian George and the rest of his assistants, because this group has really bought in and raised their level of play.
They absolutely have, and we've all seen at times over the course of the season, it just feels like a lot of times it gets overshadowed a little bit by what's done offensively for this team. Talking with Brett Balmanotti, he's the play-by-play man for the Toledo Rockets. Are getting set for the Dollar General Bowl tomorrow night in Mobile against Appalachian State. One last question before we get to some of the nitty-gritty on the game itself. Earlier in the week, announcement of a little bit of an extension for Jason Candle as head coach. Give us the details of that, and how nice is that to keep him locked up?
Well, I can only tell you what is public knowledge right now, Jim. Again, I wasn't part of those behind the closed doors dealings with the administration and his agent, but he's going to be around for the long term, and that's what you want. That's not just what you want from an administrative standpoint. Look, Jason Candle is not the type of coach when his head hits the pillow at night that his mind is wandering about where he's going to be in another year or half a year. He's worried about when he gets up the next morning, what his practice schedule is going to look like. And now that he's locked in, that's great from recruiting purposes. We just had the early signing period earlier this week, and they've locked in just about everybody that was in the top three on their radar per position. So it's a situation here where the university made a statement. They've ponied up. He has gotten a raise, but at the same time, I'll guarantee you that's not going to lessen his drive one bit.
Oh, absolutely. And right now, he's obviously focused, especially right now, on other things like the game itself, like the early signing period. And we know over the course of time that if you're successful in the Mid-American Conference, the big boys do start calling. But on the flip side, it's nice to know that should he decide to keep it and not take some of those phone calls, that he'll be here for the Rockets for the longer term, as we know he's done an outstanding job. Talking with Brett Balmanotti, he's the play-by-play man for the Toledo Rockets. Now let's get to some of the nitty-gritty on this game tomorrow night, the Dollar General Bowl in Mobile, Appalachian State. That's the co-champions, by the way, despite their 8-4 record of the Sun Belt. Last time you'll ever, by the way, in college football, hear the words co-champion, because every conference, incidentally, next year will have a conference title game. But this is also somewhat of a rematch and a partial vengeance game, if you will, as Appalachian State had beaten the Rockets the last time these two teams met. This is still a solid, solid football team.
It's a good football team. It is a different-looking football team, as both teams are, from a season ago. But again, when you talk about this matchup, Jim, you're talking about two great quarterbacks. Taylor Lamb, 6'2", 200 pounds. He's a senior from Calhoun, Georgia. He's thrown for over 2,600 yards this season. He's had 27 touchdowns to just 6 interceptions. You compare that to what Logan Woodside has done this year, and again, his numbers, fantastic. He set the single-season record. He's got the career record. But he's thrown for 3,758 yards, 28 touchdowns to just 5 interceptions. Both are very similar. As a matter of fact, as far as active passers are concerned in the NCAA, Logan Woodside is number 6. Taylor Lamb is number 8. And probably two quarterbacks, if you want to say, flying under the radar, two of the best in the entire country are going to go head-to-head tomorrow night.
And that makes for a fun, fun matchup, because quite frankly, some of the bowl games I've seen thus far in the early going of bowl season have not been entertaining at all. So nice to see that with a couple of quarterbacks that who can put up some numbers on both sides. Should make for an entertaining game. It also tells me that the defense that's able to get the most pressure, force the most turnovers, things of that nature, might be the key to this whole game then.
Well, and they're going to do it in two different ways. Again, App State's defense, what they did last year was take away Michael Roberts. And he did score a touchdown early, and then he almost fell off the face of the earth. They took away one of, if not the biggest, aerial threat that UT had last season. On the flip side, UT's defense is going to have to, again, take care of Taylor Lamb. They ran that zone read to near perfection last season. Taylor Lamb rushed for 125 yards on just 9 carries, and he had a touchdown. He threw for almost 125 yards and another touchdown, but he beat UT with his feet last year, more so than his arm. And I know in talking with defensive coordinator Brian George again earlier this week, you've got two things that are key there. Your defensive ends are going to have to set the edge, keep him in between the hash marks. Then, to back that up, last season in the bowl game, a couple of linebackers got a little overzealous, and they ran through gaps that weren't their responsibility. Lamb is a smart quarterback. He read that, made the adjustment, and then you're looking at his backside. So, again, I'm not just saying this. Taylor Lamb, both with his feet, probably even more so than his arm, is going to be the key to App State's offense. And if Toledo can keep him in between the hash marks tomorrow night, I like their chance.
How much did that pass game against Appalachian State, has that, from what you've talked to in recent weeks with the coaches and or the players, how much has that game come up in any of the conversations?
It does, only from the standpoint that the same quarterback's back. They've got three of their offensive linemen who are back from a season ago. So, like I said earlier, it's a little bit of a different team, but schematically, they're still the same. They've still got the same offensive philosophy. So they are really pouring over last year's game film, and they think they're going to be ready this year.
We're talking with Brett Balmanot. He is the play-by-play man for the Toledo Rockets. They're down in Mobile getting set for tomorrow night's Dollar General Bowl against Appalachian State. Joining us here on the Extravaganza, give me an X-Factor player for the Rockets, somebody whose name has been called, but maybe not as often as the Woodsides and the Swansons and such this year, that might have a big impact in this game.
I'm going to flip to the defensive side there, Jim. Ola Adeni is going to have to sit out the first half because he was called for targeting in the MAC championship game against Akron. I have no doubt they're probably going to try and test that side. UT is going to have to kind of spin the roulette wheel as far as personnel goes. I've been told Zach Quinn might actually flip to the other side of the line and start there, and either Malik Jones or really Ross, one of those two guys might get the start on the other side. But when Ola Adeni comes in, I don't think they're going to have the same effectiveness. So I would say watch for big number 9, the big right end for Toledo, because I think he can do just what we're talking about, and that's keep Lamb in between the hash marks.
Final question before we let you go, and thanks so much for taking the time from down there in Mobile. Brent Balvin, on play-by-play man for the Rockets, getting set for the Dollar General Bowl, which he'll be on the call for that one, of course, tomorrow night, Toledo against Appalachian State. Crystal ball it for me. How do you see this one playing out, and are we looking indeed at that Rockets' 12th victory of this 2017 season?
I think we will, Jim. I think it's going to be a close game for a half, but I think there's a little bit more weapons in the chamber, if you will, for Toledo. And again, if UT can contain Lamb, he is the straw that stirs the drink. I see, a 17-14 or 21-14 game at the half stretching out, and I see Toledo winning this one, especially with improved defense. I'm looking at a 35-21 or a 38-24 style ball game. And I do think Toledo gets the third team in school history to pick up 12 points.
And it will be absolutely fantastic if that is indeed what we are watching and seeing and listening to with you on the call for it tomorrow night. Brett Balmanot, play-by-play man for the Toledo Rockets. Thank you so much for the time here on this Friday. Enjoy your time down there in Mobile, and hopefully sometime down the line we can catch up once again.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Go Rockets.
Yeah, Brett Balmanot, play-by-play man of the Toledo Rockets, down in Mobile right now, getting set for that Dollar General Bowl tomorrow night. Rematch of last year's bowl game, which the Rockets fell in, of course, not this exact bowl game, but the same opponent, Appalachian State. And they are the co-champions, for what it's worth, despite their 8-4 record of the Sun Belt. They shared that conference title with Troy. Last time, again, as I mentioned, you will ever hear the words co-champion for a college football conference, because starting next year, even the Sun Belt will be breaking into divisions and having a title game, so all 10 conferences will have a championship game. So the concept of a co-champion for a conference will enter the dustbin of history after this one, but it's going to be a fun game. And I like what Brent said there about the quarterbacks in this one. It's the same two guys, Lamb and Woodside, of course, from last year. Both offenses very, very capable, because again, quite frankly, if you look at some of these bowl games so far, and I mean, just the three this week, 50-3, 51-10, 28-3. I mean, you talk about snooze fests. And then earlier today, the Ohio Bobcats for a while were whooping up on UAB. So go Mid-American Conference, by the way, on that one. But these bowl games have just not been entertaining so far. We've had discussions here on the show over the course of this week. We probably will again later on that. I made it as one of the Buffalo Wild Wings wild stats of the day a few days ago, that if you made bowl eligibility 8, you would actually be able to cut the number of bowl games in half. We all know there's too many. So my hope for this one, in addition to the obvious one, get Toledo that 12th win, would be only the third time in school history that they achieved that many victories for the Rockets in a single season, but just an entertaining game, because that's what's been lacking so far in these bowl games. They already have enough problems with people thinking, oh goodness, we're in the question mark sponsored by whoever bowl that I don't care about. At least the least you could do is make the games entertaining. They so far have not been, but I agree with Brent. This does promise to be an entertaining offensive filled, I think, football game here in this one, and I do think the Rockets should win it as well. I mean, this is no knock on Appalachian State. They are a solid football team. We saw what happened when the Rockets weren't fully prepared a year ago in their bowl game against the same team. But this is still a team in the Rockets that has done so much so well over the course of the season. It may not, yeah, for especially for you old school Rocket fans, it may not be the equivalent of some of those undefeated teams from the late 60s, early 70s under Ely, or even I know there was a team that went undefeated with a tie. I believe that was on 95, or even those 04 Rockets and Bruce Gradkowski's last year. But, you know, a win would solidify this truly as one of the best seasons in Toledo Rocket football history, earning Jason Candle the completely deserved extension on his particular contract. And, you know, even though he may not serve the whole contract, because we know how it is in the MAC, at some point you can't help but answer those phones when the big boys start calling. And if they haven't started calling Jason Candle yet, they soon will be, especially with a win here, as he's done an outstanding job, not just on the field, but in the recruiting side of things as well. The Rockets these last couple years have been one of the better recruiting classes consistently in the Mid-American Conference, which, you know, says a lot because we are talking the Mid-American Conference. But overall, one of the most solid seasons in Rocket football history. And like Brent Balbinot, the play-by-play man, who thanks so much for joining us from Mobile here this afternoon, I, too, think it'll be a higher-scoring affair with the Rockets in the lead and winning this game. And that would set up the fact that, yeah, you have Central Florida and Memphis, very decent teams in that American. Boise State is a two-loss football team. They already won their bowl game, and their season's done, by the way. But you could make an argument that the Rockets should be right there in that conversation as one of the best group of five, as they call it, teams in college football here in 2017. That promises to get even better, even though guys like Logan Woodside will be playing his last game. And enjoy that, by the way, while you still can for one more time. Logan Woodside, of course, rewriting the quarterback record book for the Toledo Rockets. This will be, one way or another, his final collegiate game. Curious, of course, to see if he gets picked up by anybody, late draft or undrafted for the NFL. That'll be very interesting to see, but enjoy that, too, one last time, just how good Logan Woodside has been for the Toledo Rockets. The Dollar General Bowl tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, I believe, yeah, 7 o'clock, the kickoff time from Mobile, Alabama. Conference champion Rockets of the MAC against conference champion Mountaineers of Appalachian State from that Sun Belt. It should be a dandy of a Dollar General Bowl. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Hey, thanks so much, everybody, for hanging out with us here on this Friday. Mike Miller on Drive Time coming at you next. We do have some high school basketball a little later tonight. Bill Clark and the crew, Whitmer at St. John's. No scoreboard show, FYI, for that one tonight, but a 7 o'clock the coverage time right here on the Ticket, and then a whole bunch of NFL football over the course of the weekend. Lions are on Sunday, a doubleheader tomorrow. You also have a fascinating college basketball game as the Buckeyes in New Orleans to take on number 5 North Carolina. Obviously, the Buckeyes will be big underdogs. We'll have that game for you as well. And then, of course, the NBA doubleheader, Cavs, Wizards, followed by Cavs Warriors, followed by Wizards Celtics on Christmas Day, and then we'll have a couple of NFL games. Pittsburgh Houston on 100.7, Oakland at Philly after the basketball here on the Ticket for your Christmas Day. We will reconvene coming up on Tuesday, so have a very, very Merry Christmas, everybody. A happy holiday. Be safe on this holiday and enjoy it for the long weekend with the holiday, and we will talk to you again on Tuesday. Mike Miller, Drive Time coming at you next. Have a very Merry Christmas. We'll see you Tuesday.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.